They just said, they're like, we've never wanted to hire someone so badly who very obviously didn't want to be hired.
Hello and welcome to Did I Do That? It's a podcast about graphic designers and the mistakes we make on the way to making something great, because it's all part of the process. I'm Sean Schumacher, and joining me today, a very special guest. He's a creative director, designer, branding consultant, and artist. He's worked on projects for the likes of Capital One, Dell, Intel, Microsoft, Nike, and even Rainier. These days, he serves as creative director at Parliament here in Portland. It's Calvin Ross-Carl.
Hello.
Hi, Calvin.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. In the arms of the angel.
Wait. Am I the angel in this?
Bad news, Calvin.
Are you in my arms
Every January, I'm guessing, teams at agencies pitch their corporate clients on April Fool's jokes. Are these ideas good? Ever? Wrong question, I would say. They are interesting, and what's more, extremely useful for this part of the show. And unfortunately, they're starting to disappear. For only $1 a day invested towards the bad ideas that are still out there, we can keep stupid alive so that the advertising world remains something other than AI-generated scripts cut into spots made of 100% templates of motion graphics and stock footage. Looking at you, YouTube ads. I think to open things up, I wanted to chart the slow demise of April Fool's for brands that is very, very evident this year. Very few of the organizations out there are doing the kind of wildly goofy stuff that makes my job easy.
Did you say we're doing this for $1?
Yeah, bad news. I'm cutting the rate for guests. Really precipitously. But yeah, you can really feel the lack of effort in this year's crop. For one, Tinder posted a press release looking for a vice president of ghost hunting, huh? Oh boy. Wow.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. Yeah.
Would the kids? When do kids use the word cringe these days? Is that a cringe thing? I don't know.
If they still are, it certainly is.
I just alienated most of your audience.
Yeah. Well, there's no better way to get in with the kids than to post a press release. I've found they're really into those. I feel like the area that keeps on giving weird foods, and specifically food things and things that are not food, is kind of coming up short this year with some really lazy fallback spicy ideas. We've got a sriracha mayo toothpaste. We've got habanero shower gel. Sure. We got those.
I was really disappointed because when you were saying spicy, I thought this was going to be like sexy advertising.
No.
And you're like, no, it's literally just spicy.
No, it's literally just spicy.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Domino's pizza made a cereal. Yeah, I don't know what to say about that one. Even Subway, a brand which this year rolled out a footlong churro, a footlong pretzel, and a footlong cookie that I very much wanted to get for a goof until learning that it contains 1,440 calories in it.
What shape is the footlong cookie?
Oh, it's long.
Tubular?
Long tubular cookie.
It's basically just like when you get the whole frozen roll of cookie dough. Just that?
Basically, yes.
All right, good on them.
Yeah, I mean, they did it. You can buy it. But yeah, they can only muster this year a thing called footlong fairy bread, which just seems to be a slab of their nasty bread slathered in tiny hard sprinkles. This is some sort of regional food that I've never heard of, fairy bread, but okay.
And that was an April Fool's
thing? That was an April Fool's thing. So, yeah, I don't know who exactly that's for.
There's one thing I can say, the greatest achievement in all of my career. We're just going to start there.
Please.
Today. I've never worked on any April Fool's thing ever, which I consider probably the biggest win of my 20-year career in design and branding.
You say that, but you've not actually heard yet the thing that I'm calling out this year as our best April Fool's collab. This is the only company that I found that is really seemingly trying, and hats off to them. It is 7-Eleven, who 24/7 they're working hard to make really regrettable ideas possible through their stores and brand. They're using April Fool's to launch seemingly their very real line of seltzers in collaboration with a company called Miracle Seltzer that sound fine. They sound fine. But they also have chosen to launch this, and I'm going to turn my iPad so you can see the incredible product that they have chosen to launch. Do you want to read that off to the folks?
Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water.
That's right. Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water.
That's 16 ounces of hot dog water.
16 ounces of incredible meaty flavor. Well,
I mean, honestly, finally someone is doing something with all that weird liquid that's at the bottom of the hot dog bag. That's like the worst. It's just, if there's like the worst like object we've ever created in our lives is like the hot dog juice that's in there.
Yeah. Like, well, you know, it's like, you know, the au jus sandwich was created, you know, to like capture the meaty juice. Now we have something to presumably dip our hot dogs into to add to the hot doggy flavor.
Oh, and they did that with Miracle Seltzer.
Yeah, they sure did. Miracle Seltzer really wanted to be attached to this one.
I can't remember who it is, but Miracle Seltzer is like made by some artist in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's like a legit great artist. I'm blanking on his name right now. And so I'm just like, good for him. Like, I actually follow Miracle Seltzer. I followed him for like years on Instagram. So I had no idea about this. I think I saw like one image of it, but I didn't see hot dog sparkling water.
I did not expect that there was going to be an actual person-to-person connection in this project.
There's like a legit artist who's like behind that whole company.
Well, that's great. I'm going to offer some quotes. I don't know if these are from him or from 7-Eleven, but they're in the press release. The Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water combines the delicious and mouth-watering experience of 7-Eleven's iconic Big Bite hot dog into one refreshing beverage. They go on to say ketchup and mustard included. So they did not include a liquid. So I'm guessing the red and yellow nasty boys are serving that purpose in the seltzer.
So it's implying that it also has condiments inside of this.
Oh, most certainly there is ketchup and mustard inside of it.
Okay.
Gone are the days of alternating bites of a hot dog with sips of a beverage. Now those on the go can swap the bun for bubbles. Really going to make people's day a lot smoother there. They did make a small number of these, too, that you can actually get by voting on their Instagram story, which for some reason was only available on the day after April Fool's. So I unfortunately did not get one. But maybe actually now that we have a personal connection.
it's so disappointing that, of course, it just turned into a bad social media campaign.
Of course,
that's where all good ideas go to die. They're just like,
no one. This is the year 2024, Calvin. No one actually makes things anymore.
Oh, boy. This is going to be an hour long conversation about that. I'm ready.
Everything's just for the views, and they made maybe five of these, and they all went to Instagram influencers.
You know, this is outside context for everyone listening, but before this, you asked me to think about some of my mistakes I've made in my career, and like the biggest one, I was like, I think making things for the internet.
Well, the internet in general, I think, is a regret that many of us who have been through various stages of it have come to regret.
Yeah.
It's not exactly lived up to the promise.
No, it certainly hasn't.
No, kind of did the opposite of what we all thought.
No, come on. The radical anarchist idea is still there. It's definitely not completely owned by corporations.
Yeah, it's a bad day when the hot dog water is actually kind of the best thing going on the internet.
It's the only good news out there.
Truly. But Calvin, I'm sure you didn't come here to talk about hot dog water today.
No, I totally did. Let's do that.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. Well, we should continue doing that. But no, you came here to talk about how you got into design. And you were kind of talking about earlier, like you have been doing this kind of your whole life.
Yeah, I mean, I've never done anything else besides my first jobs at Radio Shack and Papa Murphy's when I was a teenager.
Wait, your first jobs were at Radio Shack and Papa Murphy's?
Oh, yeah. They were right next door to each other in Battleground, Washington.
Convenient.
I literally quit one and walk next door to the other one. So that was
transferable skill set.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If not giving a fuck is your skill set, those are great places for it.
I mean, I was gonna say Radio Shack is full of not giving a fuck, but Papa Murphy's is the pizza shop where they do not even cook your pizza
they
for you.
Literally, don't even try.
No. You figure this out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Man. Well, anyway, so that's how I actually got started in this. The start came when, I mean, I grew up out in redneck country in like Eastern Washington and then Battleground, but I was definitely always the awkward art queer kid out there. And so I just had no other choice. It was either art or design. And I mean, actually I chose art to start out with. So
It makes sense, because I think, you know, it is a lot harder to figure out, like, what does design look like? And you were probably already doing some art in school.
Yeah.
But, like, when did that kind of start to manifest into, like, this is the thing I really want to do?
I think after high school, I took a year off. I did that whole thing, took a year off, and I just painted. That was it. I just painted for a whole year. And so I did that. I was working at Radio Shack. I wasn't living at home, but I had a bedroom in my dad's house. In this, like, very bizarre little house that he lived in, where I just painted, and I did that for a year. And then at some point I decided I needed to grow up, and I actually went to school at Pacific Northwest College of Art. I started in the design program, hated it. Hated every bit of it. But the other thing that I lucked out in was during that time, part of the reason I ended up hating it was because I got lucky and I got a job when I was like 19 at an agency.
How?
Old boys club stuff. Oh, it was my older brother played in a band with a guy that was a creative director and did the thing where he was like, you know, you should meet my brother. He's going to school for design. Keep in mind, by this time, I had already dropped out of the design program in that first year because I hated it and I switched over to painting.
Wow. He was working off old information yet you still got the job.
Yeah. And I had a portfolio of, you know, I played in metal bands when I was a teen in my early 20s. And so I had a portfolio of really terrible metal band covers and stuff like that, some bad paintings. And so I just had this like hodgepodge of like the things I make. You know, it's like what your first portfolio always is. Like, these are the things I'm into. Like, I made some websites because I kind of learned how to code. I made some bad posters. I made these really terrible paintings. And so somehow I convinced him to pay me $10 an hour for my first job when I was 19. So
what were you doing over there?
It was just a very generalist design job. I mean, I was also in college, so I was going there a few days a week working. Yeah. And I got a little bit of everything. Like, I did some front-end development work, but I did packaging design, I did branding. It was a really small shop. There were just a few of us. And so I just got complete experience in everything, like total general design. And it was great, which turns out that's still relevant to me today. But yeah, absolutely amazing opportunity.
So that's wild. So you start in design, you start going to school for design, you immediately decide this is not it.
Yeah.
Switch over to painting, and yet your design career is actually starting right kind of at that exact same moment.
Yeah. And it was a great chance to kind of see those two different worlds together, like learning about them all at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about this later, my deep thoughts on the difference of art and design or something if we want. It was just really interesting to see them develop in me at the same time, because I think they're such dramatically different worlds.
Very much so.
And so to kind of get both those experiences, and where like art is this wild, free thing where you get to drive everything, and then design is this thing where you get to kind of like, you have to learn other people's problems and take it in. Having those two things where you're developing them all at the same time was just really fun.
Yeah. So you're advancing in your painting, working, kind of doing what sounds like kind of production-y work at this agency.
Yeah, like, pretty much.
Yeah, like what happens, how does that progress? Like, where do you end up going, like, as you are kind of closing in on the end of school?
At the end of school, well, I mean, I got lucky, like many folks around me during then, where we graduated in 2008.
Oh, yeah, a great time.
Which was a great time. So, like,
a banner year for failure.
Yeah. if you wanted to have a major failure in your life, own a design agency starting in 2008.
Or own a house in Las Vegas. Yeah. Any of these are great choices.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of like the shakeup was then. That all hit, got laid off after working there for a few years, and it kind of all fell apart then, and took some time off. And then, I'm not supposed to do the and thens. That's the number one rule of interviewing, is don't do the and then. But I'm saying and then. I decided to probably, you know, if we're talking about mistakes on this, I probably made my first big mistake in design, which was I decided to focus and took a job as a UX designer. I like focus and specialize on something.
In what would have been the very early days of UX even really being a term, to be honest.
Yeah. No one knew what it was in those days.
Yeah.
I started working at an agency then. I got lucky. I'm at a great paycheck. I took it because of the paycheck. Let's be honest.
I mean, that's a good motivator.
It was great. I mean, the team was outstanding. It was like, It was at a place called Wagner Edstrom, which is more known for being a PR firm, but they had an internal design agency that was amazing. It was ran by like some guys from Frog Design and IDEO and like that. And it just had like a small team of us that were all standout, but mostly like UX and digital people. And I kind of got brought into that and started getting real heads down into UX design. And I hated it. it's just was the least inspiring work.
Yeah, like, what did UX work even look like in those days?
Well, then I think we had like a really progressive team. I shouldn't say I hated it. It was fine. I learned a lot while doing it.
It was maybe not for you.
Yeah, and I wasn't a really empowered role there where I got to always pitch the work, which wasn't always the case at your first design job, you know. So at this new place, like I got to pitch all the work I was doing and present it and everything. So that probably is what I learned the most there. But the big challenge of it was just that, like, it just wasn't a type of work that was super exciting to me. We did great stuff. We did, like, Sasquatch Music Festival website and things like that. But what UX looked like then was, like, in its infancy.
Yeah.
It was mostly just, like, you knew how to, like, notate wireframes really heavily. That's basically what it was. And, like, you knew how to, like, follow user paths. But that was still young then. But on my team, we were in those like early days of like mobile responsive web design.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Which that no one was doing it then. And everything was a complete hack to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. There was not really a way, like Apple had shipped the iPhone with the idea that you would be visiting the New York Times website optimized for desktop and be zooming in with the pinch to zoom.
Yeah.
A thing that I'm sure someone on their team must have realized is unsustainable very quickly.
Yeah. I'm convinced they just forced it. They're like this, whatever this, what is it? The CSS group. Is it the W3?
Yes.
Yeah. They just forced their hand to be like, you have to make up all these rules for CSS.
We can't have websites that look this bad.
Yeah. So I'll say that was like part of the reason I loved it, because it still felt experimental and creative and janky. And you were working on these kind of projects where you just kind of like, when a client complained that it doesn't work in Internet Explorer, you could just kind of be like, fuck you, it can't.
Yeah.
Like, it just can't.
This is not, we're heading in a completely different direction.
And
now,
so it was a pretty progressive group. But ultimately, once that stuff started getting kind of like solidified and standardized, just immediately uninteresting, because you're like, oh, well, it's figured out now.
Well, it also kind of started to bleed back into the rest of web design in a way that I think made web design way less interesting.
Yeah.
And we've seen people actually visiting websites less, I think, partly as a result of that choice.
Yeah. Well, there was that time where, like, I feel like that was, like, the end of the Wild West of the internet, where, like, anyone could make anything. It could be a little janky. It could be, like, a little bit sloppy.
Yeah.
And then something just happened in that transition where, like, it all became about frameworks and everything. And it's just, like, you had to know too much.
Yeah.
And it just got, like, not fun.
The modern world of having to compile websites is a thing that I hate.
Yeah.
I hate it. The beauty of this was that you could just make it and it worked and you could look at it.
Yeah. Apologies to any digital designers.
Yeah,
listening.
Sorry, folks.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. I'm just old.
Yeah, I would love to just open up Netscape Composer and make myself a copy of the Space Jam website.
Sounds so good.
Built with tables.
Yeah. I think that was like part of the thing why I liked those days too, is like it felt similar to me like painting.
Yeah.
Where you could just like put some code together, output it, and like you could kind of see what happens.
Well, I think that's a really good point too, because I think one of the things that we lost in the transition to mobile first is the idea of pages being composed the way that you would compose any other piece of design.
Yeah.
It's like a page is now just this automated structure full of components, and that's fine, but that's just a factory that you've built.
Yeah, and for me, like, I'm an absolute control freak, so knowing that my like canvas is not going to ever change sizes is magical.
Yeah,
like, that's
truly
all I
is.
Want. Like, I just want to know the bounds.
Yeah.
Like,
everybody's got a 1024 by 768 monitor.
Yeah,
you know?
Perfect.
The world is very simple.
Or in those days, it was like 480 by 640 or whatever it was.
Yeah, truly. Ye olden times. So many days I spent in HyperCard making things that were that size.
It's embarrassing. It's not even that long ago.
No. And yet it's longer ago than some of my students have been alive.
Yep.
terrifying. We're old. Yep.
just two old fossils here.
Yeah, welcome to Fossil Corner. Thank you for uncovering us.
Fossil Talk with Sean and Calvin.
Yeah, we were in danger of being turned into oil, and I don't want that. I don't want to go in somebody's Maserati or whatever.
Maserati is at best. It's more like Miata.
Yeah, let's be honest. Miata. Yeah, it's a Miata with an oil leak.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you know, you are getting into UX in its nascent stages, and you're not finding it to be kind of exactly what you want it to be. Like, what do you do? How do you untie that knot?
It turns out you work on the Make-A-Wish Foundation website for about 2 years.
Oh, no.
And that will slowly crush your soul because it is rolling out the largest project ever.
Oof.
And once that was finally done, I was just like, I'm out.
you needed a wish to be made to free you from that.
Exactly.
2 years.
It was about 2 years. It was like 70 different websites or something like that. And I even ditched out before it was completely out because I had to get out. But that was then when, you know, this is something I think a lot of people run into, where there's always this challenge of, like, as a design person, like, do I specialize? Do I go broad? Do I, like, where I do? And I just decided at that point, like, it wasn't, UX was going into an area where it just wasn't creative enough for me anymore. It didn't feel like I was, like, could create anything I wanted anymore. And so left that after being there for a few years, switched over to an agency. Well, it's had a couple names, called Epifio or Sincerely Truman. It was those names at some point, but it was great. I learned a lot there. So
yeah. So yeah, you're pivoting jobs. You're moving to a different spot. Like, what do you end up doing at Sincerely Truman or Epifio, depending on which stage of it is?
I think at first I got hired on as a made up job, which is a creative lead. Still, no one knows what a creative lead does.
It sounds important, though.
It'd be like, are you a creative director? Not quite as important. Yeah. That's basically what it translated to.
I mean, you could also be hired as a creative lead, and it would say the exact same thing on the business card.
The creative lead.
Yeah.
No, that's just like a metal sculptor.
Yeah, it is. That's when you want to have an on-site metal sculptor that's slowly poisoning themselves.
Yeah. Worth it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I think I switched over then to being that, and it turned into more of like an art director type of role, because it was more of a branding and advertising agency. And that was where I finally, I think, hit my stride. Granted, this was already like, at that point, like 8 years into my career. So, it still took me some time to figure out like where I was. And I wasn't good at it, but I got better. And so, that was kind of where I ended up. That was when I started being like, okay, I like the freedom that comes with this, and like the freedom that comes with branding, and the way you can think about that kind of in a more artistic way.
Yeah.
Than you can usually with like UX design and things like that.
So. Well, yeah. And you're not chasing the tail of technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too.
No, like, I want to do quite the opposite. Yeah. I want to chase the tail of dinosaurs because we're fossils. That's what it is.
You want to brand British Petroleum.
Yes. If the money's right.
I mean, sure. If the money's right, I'll do it too.
Yeah.
I'll bathe in oil. Please.
I'll say the thing that no one ever says on a podcast. Sell out. Take the money. Go with it. We live in a capitalist hellscape. Take the money and get out.
I will do any ad read you want as long as you pay 1 month of my rent. Yeah. Please.
Yeah.
At this stage.
Or $1 for an April Fool's. April Fool's joke.
You know, the sad part is I made that joke after those commercials, those Sarah McLachlan pet commercials, help these animals. But I bet that Big Bite hot dog sparkling water with inflation now would have cost a lot more than a dollar. That's probably like a $2 beverage.
Oh, yeah.
For 16 ounces of hot dog water.
Well, I mean, even Arizona tea is not 99 cents anymore, right?
I think it still is, but they've introduced a lot of variants that are considerably more than that to kind of like... Yeah, you can go for the base model, but
okay, Arizona,
why wouldn't you get the upgrades?
Arizona tea loophole. Yeah. I don't like that. It's 99 cents till I die.
Well, I mean, that's what the 99 cent store said, and they did die
this
week.
So, man, yeah, speaking of capitalist hellscapes, the 99 cent store can't even exist anymore.
No.
It's just heartbreaking.
No, it's a wild ride when, you know, Dollar Tree is no longer a dollar, and also everything is worse in it than it was when it was a dollar.
Man. Some of the best memories with my grandma. Yeah. She used to take me to the dollar store. I could buy anything I want.
Oh, yeah.
It was so good.
That's paradise as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Your allowance budget goes so far.
Yeah. We were poor. It didn't matter. You could buy so much stuff there.
Mouse traps and air fresheners. And
I was like a kid who was like super into cap guns.
Oh, sure.
That was
my thing.
That's
one of the few places you can still get those.
Oh, I bet. They were so good. That's definitely like the redneck side of me. Like growing up, I was like, guns are cool. Like, yeah, that. I have differing opinions these days. But yeah. When I was young, I was like, yeah, this is pretty sweet.
It's a slightly different world than it was then in that regard.
Turns out not everyone has cap guns.
No, if only. But yeah, so you're like, you've now transitioned into like fully doing branding at Sincerely Truman. What does that start to look like for you?
I mean, for me, the big thing then was starting to lead teams. That was kind of like the biggest change, where you're like actually leading projects. You're not often always doing the design. You're kind of taking a step back. You're kind of still doing like, you know, a percentage of your time is dedicated to design, but a lot of it is more about art direction and guiding projects and then pitching projects, like becoming kind of like a professional pitcher. That's what I think. Even now, that's what I think of my job as more than anything, is like, yeah, maybe like half my time is design or a third of my time, but my real job is pitching the work.
Yeah.
And so that started me on that process. And that was like a wild ride there. And I worked there for a few years, but learned tons. And like had some creative directors that were really, really influential, like hard to work with, but I learned a lot from them. And so I think that was kind of like a really critical few years where I was there. I was like, I focused in on what I actually wanted to do. I shouldn't say I focused, because I broadened, I generalized.
Yeah, you
everything.
Anti-focused.
I anti-focused. And so I just learned to kind of like open up to a lot of different possibilities with design, and learned kind of some of the absurdities of the advertising world and how far you can get with it. And so it kind of taught me to not be afraid to pitch wild ideas and lead a team through that wild idea and maintain the vision for it. And so those were like probably the most critical few years of my life as far as my design career goes.
So it sounds like you're picking up tons of skills. Like you basically are developing the Calvin Ross Carl as creative director that we know today.
Yeah.
What ends up being your next step though? Like what?
Wow. What was my next step during then? That's a lot of things happened in my life at that point where I actually ended up leaving that job. So during all of that time, I've been a painter this whole time.
Yes. That's the other track, is that you weren't just doing painting at PNCA.
No.
You graduated and like are an exhibiting artist.
Yeah,
like,
I was. I'm away from it now. I finally got smart and got away from it. But
well, the art world has, it's kind of gotten considerably smaller in the past decade.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, I think this also, if we're talking about mistakes, this leads into like the next mistake of my career. I was working at this very demanding design firm. I mean, this was like the classic that was like, we're putting in 60, 70 hour weeks pretty regularly, which is a lot.
Yeah, a small studio with a lot of hustle.
Yeah. And so it was a great team, but it was just, we were just burning the candle. And on top of that, I also had my own art career where I was exhibiting all over the country. And on top of that, I also then decided to open an art gallery, which used to be up in Portland, called Carl and Sloan Contemporary. And so it was just like full-blown workaholic mode. And by the end of that, I quit because my life just fell apart.
Yeah.
Like, I got a divorce. I got burnt out. It was everything, like, all hit at the span of this one time. And so that was then when I kind of finally realized the next big mistake of my career was, just don't work yourself to death.
I mean, you're burning your candle all over. The candle is just in incinerator at that point.
Like, yeah, it was just a complete change in the way I looked at, like, the role that design has to take in my life and the way that my career does. Because, like, design is just a job like any other job. And that was the moment I finally realized it. Like, I wasn't getting anything out of it besides just a salary at that point. And the work was good, the people were good, but it was like, it only ended in this kind of like very negative experience. So I just like quit and took time off for a little while.
Yeah.
And it was great. Highly recommend quitting your job.
I mean, it's such a hard place, because I've been there as well. And like that moment of realizing that it's needed, that it's no longer optional to do it too.
And
the risk associated with it, because it's like it's stepping into nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
And taking that time, I mean, thankfully, I mean, this is also the reason to get in design. It pays decently. That's great. So I had like a little bit of a savings thing, you know, where I was like, I could kind of fall back into that. And they were nice and treated me gently and counted it as like a layoff. So I got some unemployment. So which is great. Get that unemployment money.
Yeah, get it.
So kind of took some time. And after that, I switched over to Parliament. Eventually,
yeah,
they came and saved me, even though I was trying to get away desperately from design.
Like, how long did you kind of take off before you went to Parliament?
I mean, the funny thing is, it probably wasn't even that long. It felt like years, because when you're a workaholic, it's like sitting there doing nothing is the worst.
Yeah,
but I think it was probably like 6 months, something like that.
Yeah,
it wasn't long. Maybe not even that long. But it was very much like I'm in my video game playing era. And I started doing interviews at Parliament then. I only reached out to a couple places where I was just like, they're the only places I was willing to work, basically. Thankfully, Parliament was one of them. I had some ins there. By the way, all of these jobs, they're all through friends. I've never applied for a job. I've never done anything. It's all through friends who work at places.
Students, this is actually a really good thing to know. Like, you will see a ton of job postings on Indeed and stuff like that. And that's not how anyone in this field gets jobs.
No, it's like, the only thing is like, do you know someone? Is your portfolio good? And are you not psychotic, basically?
Yeah.
Like, those are the three things.
Damn,
like,
it. Two out of the three.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm at least good at masking the third one, so.
Well, I was talking about me, but and really, I'm one out of the three, if I'm being honest.
And so, yeah, I didn't say the portfolio was good. My portfolio is okay. No,
your portfolio is great. I've seen
thank
it.
You. Thank you. But yeah, and so that was like, that's a big thing during that. It was just like, it's all friends, hitting up all your friends always. Like, I don't apply for jobs.
Yeah.
just like make friends with the places you want to be at.
Yeah. And like, if you don't know somebody there, reach out to somebody, yeah. Talk to them.
Yeah. And so I had a friend who was there. They brought me in to do interviews, and it was still funny. It was like, this is my favorite thing ever. They just said, they're like, we've never wanted to hire someone so badly who very obviously didn't want to be hired. Like, they had this, they had like one big, they had one big project coming in, and they kept doing the classic thing, which if you've ever worked as a freelancer, this is common, but they were hiring me full time. They were like, well, as soon as this one project comes in, we're hiring. Like, don't worry, we're sorry it's being held. I was just, I don't care. I'm going home and playing my PlayStation.
Yeah.
Like, that's my life right now. I was like, you just let me know and I'll be in here someday.
You're only reporting to Crash Bandicoot right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. President Bandicoot. He's the leader of
Why
all.
Why did we elect him? Oh, God. Yeah. That explains a lot about what's gone wrong in this country.
Not, honestly, still not the worst orange president we've had.
No, truly, truly. I would take him over that option any day. I would take the Big Bite hot dog water over him any day.
Man, President Big Bite hot dog sparkling water.
I mean, it'll make more coherent decisions,
yeah,
I think.
Finally a platform I can get behind.
Yeah. Put all the parts of the hot dog in the water.
Yep.
Wow. So you, like, this job is just, like, calling out to you, reaching out, trying their damnedest to get you on board. Like, and it finally worked. You joined Parliament.
Yeah.
What was it like kind of going back and starting there?
It was great, because it was a team that was, like, a similar size to where I was at before. But they were just, you know, the owners of Parliament, nicest folks ever. Chris, who's like the main founder, is crazy in the best way. And he's just like a whip smart kind of outstanding designer, first of all, and just whip smart thinker. Like, so I just learned tons from them right up front. And the type of work we were doing was like, I started off on a Capital One bank project. Which I don't know if I'm actually allowed to talk about doing work for Capital One. They've got like one of those kind of things where it's like, did you work for Nike? No, you didn't work for Nike. Like, I definitely have mine out there in like secretive ways, but you're like not supposed to show it. But the first project was some really big video installation work for a branch of theirs in New York. And so it was kind of the perfect mix for me of like, it was this big abstract artsy videos that we needed to project on walls.
Hey.
And so I was the weird art guy. But also had like this design background, so that was why they wanted me to come in there. So that was the like main thing I worked on for almost like the first year.
So that's a big project for an unnamed company that we'll never know the answer to because I've bleeped it every single time we've said it.
You can keep that in there. They know.
Yeah. And maybe they'll just think that the name of the company was a curse word. Yeah. Who knows?
Also, if Rich Fairbanks, that's the CEO of Capital One.
His name is Rich Fairbanks?
Yeah. If he's listening to this.
Oh, my God.
Good. I know. It's the best.
Do we live in a cartoon? Did we somehow get transported into a cartoon world somehow?
I think it's amazing. He was born for that job. Yeah. Good for him.
Well, I mean, it was either going to be him or Scrooge McDuck. And I think Mr. McDuck is too busy swimming in his giant bank vault full of coins.
Yeah, Rich Fairbanks. I love it.
How does Scrooge McDuck's bank vault work? Coins you can't swim in. I know this for a fact.
Are you rich enough that you've tried?
I know. but if I were to just think about the properties that coins have, they're hard. They sit flat on top of each other. If I were to try to dive into those coins, I would be grievously injured.
You sound like a man who's not rich enough to know.
You know what? You know what? Fair enough. Yeah, I'm living a Donald Duck lifestyle when really I should be living a Scrooge McDuck lifestyle.
More, gotta be Scrooging.
Yeah. maybe the new PSU art building will have a Scrooge McDuck bank vault.
Let's hope so.
We have to hope so. Yeah. We'll finally get the facilities we need, including the giant Scrooge McDuck bank vault.
Yeah. I mean, you got to.
You got to. Where else are the Beagle Boys going to try to rob every couple months?
So good.
Why does he do that? He's actively being robbed all the time. Put your money in a real bank, Scrooge. What's wrong with you?
You can't swim in it there.
No, you can't swim in it there. Yeah. That's true. He needs that. It's the only way he's still a duck, basically, when you get right down to it.
The difference is I probably wouldn't do design for Scrooge McDuck. Not a great guy, really, in the end.
Yeah, I guess that's true. he does seem to be up to no good generally. He constantly endangering his nephews.
Yeah. Not a good guy.
No, not a good guy. So you're doing this Capital One project, and like what else do you kind of start to do at Parliament?
I mean, they end up having a lot of different fun types of projects. The other side of the business was that they, during those days, were like really focusing in like outdoor work. So we got to work with a lot of like fun outdoorsy brands, even though I'm very much not an outdoorsy person, but I can pretend. there's advice for all designers. Just pretend.
Yeah.
And so my years at Parliament after that kind of started changing. Like we started changing the size of the company because it was just like we were honestly kind of too big for what we wanted to do at some point. So we started like cutting staff, which is always a bummer. And it was just kind of called for when we were like client shifting, that kind of classic thing, just normal agency life. But the great thing that came out of it was we started really focusing in on what our niche is now, where our niche now is just brand strategy and branding. Like it's just brand strategy and visual identity. That's generally all we do now.
Yeah.
And I can elaborate on any of those if we need to, but then that's it. Like we just focused in. That's my specialty now. I guess my specialty is helping companies do all the brand strategy up front, doing the visual identity. And then kind of if there's anything that comes out of that, we'll usually work on something, whether it's like ad campaign concepts or something like that. Occasionally internet things, which I don't like working on. I call them internet things. That's... on the computer.
Yeah, on the America Online.
Yeah, all of us are people who are just like, we really know what we like. We really like focus on those things. Anything else, we're happy to send people elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the reasons I end up really loving it now is like, we're happy to turn away work. We're just like, it's not in our wheelhouse.
Maybe it would be good to kind of talk about brand strategy because I know we have a lot of folks that listen to the show that don't really know too much about that world to begin with. Like branding just maybe seems like a monolithic thing.
Yeah. And I mean, especially for like a lot of folks think branding is like just the visual aspects of it, of like logo, all of that kind of stuff, which that's an important part of it. But all of the work that we do up front is all the strategy side of it, which is like you're actually just getting in with companies, you're acting more as a consultant, and you're helping them establish all the like mission, vision, values, that kind of stuff, any brand attributes. You're helping them decide on like what kind of customer personas they want to go after, which we all know of these things. We've all like heard of these things, but most places don't actually like dedicate a specific part of the process just for that. Like For us, that's a few month process, just that stuff. And then we go into a few months of all the identity work.
Which is like wild, because that strategy bit is like them figuring out who they are, which is not easy.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know who I am, and I'm years old. But you know, like every place I've been that has like embarked on something like that, there end up being like complicated discussions that come out of it about, well, what is it that we really want to do?
Yeah. And I feel like you end up doing that work anyway, even just if you're just like a freelance designer who's just a hired gun, just doing some branding work, you have to make that stuff up anyway.
Yeah.
Because like, all you're trying to do is just like, what is there some kind of foundation that I can build this brand on? You don't realize it, but you already do that work. And so we just formalized that process. And like the one way I really like to think about it is like, we always tell people this, that all that work does is it just provides objective answers to subjective questions.
Yeah.
Like, cause that's what you do in branding. Like, I don't know, like, what should this thing look like? And you're like, well, we have this 100-page document that tells you exactly what that thing should look like.
We figured it out and we wrote it down.
It should feel like, I don't know, whatever their brand attributes are, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's interesting to be like, because that's kind of what Parliament did in in downsizing and focusing on this.
Yeah.
It's like you did that on your own as a company to be like, well, this is actually,
yeah,
this is our value. Like, this is what we can do really well.
Yeah. And a lot of it, too, is even just, you know, you don't think of like an agency even like identifying their own audience a lot of the time. And
yeah,
that was like something that we really did, because you see this all the time where it's like, it's an agency of two people and they're like, we're a full service agency. You're like, fuck you. No, you're not. You're not a full service agency. Like,
we just never sleep.
You just can't be. You might try, but you're just not. And so we kind of like, I think we were in our early days, maybe had a little bit of a similar stance to that. And we just finally were like, the jig is up. No, yeah, no, we're not. Like, let's focus in on the things we're good at. And we kind of, you know, like I said before, we were working with like a lot of outdoor brands and things like that. We realized there was a specific type of company, attitude-wise, personality-wise, that we got along with better, who are like always companies, we call them like, we always say they're at like some kind of inflection point, but it's usually just like something dramatic has happened in their company. It's not a startup usually, because startups aren't in that point.
No.
It's like something has changed dramatically. There's new ownership, or there's new money involved or something like that. And so they have to get their shit together. And that's when we step in. And we found there's just like a group of companies that's always like what happens. So we know kind of how now to focus in, like, are they in that right place? Or like, if you're a startup and you just got like $100 million in investment, we're out. Like, you're too much trouble. like I love you, but startups are at that point are like a hot mess when they get their first money. And so you're
have no idea who they are.
No, we want you in like 5 years when it's a failure and we're gonna help bring you out of it.
We tried to sell our product to everyone, and it turns out you can't sell a thing to everyone, human on the planet Earth.
Yeah, and so that's kind of like where we've really found, like, we work with a lot of companies who are rebranding and stuff like that, who maybe lost their way, or they're like at a big moment where they need to really focus their way.
Yeah.
I love that work. It's so much fun. Like, it's just, you're getting paid to think all day about like where this company should go. And like, I spend a lot of time designing still too, but a lot of my day is just writing now, or writing and talking with clients.
But that's so important, because that builds the foundation of all the other stuff.
Yeah.
I know one of the big things that Parliament has done, and like your work in particular, has been your work in beverages.
Yeah. Love beverages.
So you love the beverage. We all love beverages.
Let me take a sip of my coffee right now. I haven't done any coffee brands in a while. Should I make this really loud slurping beverages noises now?
Yeah, give us the ASMR coffee.
I don't know if I can do that.
Let me see if I can. Oh no, that didn't work good.
I almost inhaled it.
Yeah, I almost just dribbled all over my shirt.
Okay.
That's not good.
Well, let's say that was brought to you by, paid for by Good Coffee, which is my favorite local cafe.
Yes, Good Coffee, which you branded.
I did the branding for.
Yeah, so like
many years ago.
And that's like, you know, you've done that. You've done beers. Like, how did you start to get into doing that?
Some of it is just things that come in through work. A lot of it's side projects. The Rainier Beer.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that one for a second. Rainier Beer, best beer of the Northwest. I'm not super into fancy beers. So when they came to us through Parliament. We'd actually done work for Olympia Beer before that. RIP Olympia Beer.
Oh, are they yeah. no more?
Yeah.
I didn't realize
it's
that.
It's all owned by Pabst.
Oh, well.
Pabst owns them all.
That'll do it.
Rainier Beer came to us and just was like, we need to tighten up everything. It's growing like crazy, but the only thing we have for the brand is the label on the can. Like, that's it. So that was why we came in and we're like, well, we need to help you write this shit.
I mean, they have that kind of off-model R sign on top of their old factory outside of Seattle.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So good.
Love it.
And I mean, for me, the interest in beverages and things like that is just, I think it comes out of my anti-internet thinking. please title this episode like Calvin Ross Carl the Luddite.
Well, that would just be because of your love of Alan Ludden.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
His great work.
Big time.
Yeah.
So I think there's just something about, like, after working for years making things digital and everything like that, at some point you just get so tired of it, you want just to hold a real thing in your hand. And I think the natural thing that's easy, honestly, is, like, doing things for beverages, doing yeah. beer, doing coffee stuff. They're just, like, real physical things, working in, like, helping design physical spaces and all of that. And
a very tangible business.
Yeah, that's like, all I want. I want to be able to hold the thing I worked on, and it's not a phone.
It's not a website that's going to disappear in a year's
yeah.
time.
I mean, I think that's it. It was like, at some point when you're working digitally, at least for me, it just felt like, I don't know, I felt like any time I would launch something, you're just like whispering into the ether, you know, and you're yeah. like, it's just out there now. And when you actually make something tangible, it's just like, this is a real thing. It has weight. It's like, you can look at it, you can spin it around in your hand. And like, or if it's like working on a space, like when I did work for Good Coffee, I like helped them pick like fixes and finishes and everything. And inside the space where you can just like walk into the space that you help create.
And that's wild.
It's just, it's the most magical feeling ever. Versus, you know, when you're doing digital work. But I don't know why I'm dogging on digital work so much today. Apparently I'm in a mood.
Well, you've already declared this to be the Luddite episode.
Yeah, this is
the
Luddite episode.
Yeah.
Everything's made by wood. It's all handmade wood objects. That's all I do anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you have been whittling this whole time.
If you hear that noise in the background.
Yeah. We're not recording in our usual studio. We're on Calvin's front porch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sitting in rocking chairs side by side.
You can't hear me yelling at the kids.
Well, they're on your lawn, in fairness.
Yeah, so I think I just got into it because one thing about me is I'm still kind of have a tinge of that workaholic mode. It mostly got beat out of me, but if there's just something I'm really passionate about, like a product, I'll usually hit them up and be like, can I just do some work for you? Even in trade, like all the Good Coffee stuff, I just did mostly in trade for free coffee for years.
Hey, I mean, that'll pay for itself pretty quickly.
Yeah, and so that was good. I mean, the Rainier Beer stuff was all through the agency, but I mean, not like they don't have huge marketing budgets. It's all passion projects, even yeah. for Parliament. Like, we just love the products, so that's why we work with them. And even when they come to us now, it might be a little thing with very little budget. We find a way to make it work, and just because we love working with them. And I mean, I do work with Son of Man, which is a cider.
Oh, yes.
It's great. It's the only good cider to drink. All other ciders are terrible. Only drink Son of Man. Son of Man, it's a Basque style cider. It's made more like wine. And I just fell in love with it. And that was just through, I met a guy, his name's Jasper, who started the company. I just met him. He knew I did the work for Rainier. And he was like, would you be interested in working on this? I was like, yes. It's the only cider I like, truly.
Yeah. It's certainly the only one that doesn't give me a headache immediately.
Yeah.
So.
And so now I do work for them, mostly in trade for some cider. And I've been doing that for years now. And it's great. I just get to work with people I like. Jasper and Ella, they're amazing. They make great stuff. And so that's kind of how a lot of those beverage things fall into my lap, is just like, they're really easy contained side projects where, like, I still got the day job that, and I'm old, so that sucks up most of my energy, but I can still, like, you know, muster enough energy to design a really cool can or a bottle and, like, help them thinking about their brand. So that it mostly ends up being just passionate side projects.
Yeah. I mean, since you've been at Parliament, have you ever had any things that have kind of gone a little sideways or?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? Honestly, not a lot. I think that's probably part of the reason why I've stayed at Parliament for so long is like, since they've always been a very focused company where we've said no to a lot of work and we know the types of things we want to do. Honestly, not really. Like the last how long have I been there? 8 years, something like that.
Wow.
I'm an old timer.
Has it really been that long?
I think so.
Oh my God.
And it's like all the work is good. And I mean, even the worst client that I have there pales in comparison to anything I've had in the past. Like mostly now it's just like the worst client you get now is just like the one who somehow ignores the work that you just did for 3 months working on their brand strategy. And then when you show them stuff, they're like, I don't get it. Why does it look this way? And you kind of have to do then like the back step and remind them. And then they're on board because they're like, oh yeah, I forgot we did all this work for 3 months.
God, that's such a, so, I mean, if there are any students out there, that's a good reminder about why so many of our branding classes do teach that strategy stuff.
Yeah. It's the only way you can kind of like stay on track and on budget, honestly. Like it's, you just need that kind of recipe to go back to where you're like, no, this is why... This is why we put the flour in the bread. It turns out it needs flour.
Yeah,
you said that before.
It's not much of a bread otherwise.
Yeah. And so that ends up being like the hardest thing that we do. So sometimes you have to have a little bit of like a come to Jesus moment with clients. But since we've kind of already like, we already know the people we like, they're kind of already pre-filtered at that point.
Yeah.
So thankfully, as far as the mistakes go, not too many mistakes have been made since the Parliament era. But I mean, the biggest mistake during the Parliament era was just a little thing called COVID. Where,
I would say that's a big whoopsie.
Yeah, where I feel like every agency didn't know how to handle the whole world's mistake that was COVID.
Well, you all had just moved into, you've got a ground floor space over, you know, kind of like inner northeast Portland.
Yeah, right on Burnside.
I guess, yeah, that's inner just east because it's on Burnside, so there's no north or south.
Yeah,
that's the line. But you just like moved into that space, and then
COVID hit, and we had the same thing that every agency had, where it's just like clients started vanishing, everything. Like we slowed down. I actually left for a year.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
I left and went to work. Okay. So keep in mind, I've been an agency guy since I was 19 years old.
Yeah,
I'm 38 now. How old am I? 38.
Oh boy. Thank God there's someone else who doesn't remember their age, because I don't either.
So I've been working in agencies my whole life, where like you have a lot of power when you work in agencies. Like you're the expert that people, they give you money to be an expert.
Yeah.
So for the first time ever during COVID, things got rough and I was just burnt out also because the world was a mess. I also bought a house during then.
Oh, wow.
Turns out remodeling a house and trying to figure out how to exist in your career during COVID wasn't fun.
Yeah.
So I actually left for a year and I went to a place called Envision, which if any old timers out there know Envision, they were like, Envision was a startup. You used it for like prototyping things. And then they had like a digital whiteboard service as well.
Yeah. And this also is kind of, it's a UX tool.
It was a UX tool.
Yeah.
So I loved it back in my old UX days. It was like the first place to kind of make a way you could prototype websites and prototype apps and everything like
that. Yeah, basically.
So it was like my number one product when in those days. And so many years on, I had a friend who worked there. He'd been there since the early days. They were hitting some rough times. They needed a new person to kind of come guide the brand. So I joined their brand team there as, what was my official title? Just art director. But my job there was basically like help them tighten up the brand and hopefully right that ship before it sank. Which it sank.
Oh, well, you know, it sounds like that was already, it was listing by the time you got there.
It was, it was taking on some water. So I was there for a year. It fell apart. They kind of shut down the whole company for the most part. And it just did what tech companies do.
Yeah.
They got to last like 13, 14 years.
Which is ancient for a tech company.
Yeah. Like
I don't think Netscape got that.
No. So I went there, worked with some awesome people. It was my friend Andy at Envision. If anybody ever remembers getting emails from Andy at Envision, that was my old friend.
I'm fairly certain I did.
He was the one who brought me in there. And I worked with an amazing creative director there who just like taught me to be a better designer, honestly. Like I think I learned a lot about visual design from him since I just hadn't been dedicating as much time to it. So that fell apart. And then next day after they laid off mostly all the staff, it was just fine. Just some time off. I just texted the folks at Parliament. I was like, do you need a creative director again? And so, like, also further proving the point, never apply for a job. Just hit up your friends.
Yeah.
I got lucky. They had replaced me when I left Parliament. They'd eventually replaced me with someone who then she went on to get another job. I think, like, had just put in her notice. Like,
oh, wow.
The same exact week randomly.
So, like, the most perfect possible timing,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, it was great. It was all it was meant to be.
Like, they're probably sitting down to be like, okay, what do we do next? Do we post the job? Oh, it's Calvin. Thank God.
Yeah. And it was great. Like, then, you know, I feel like we have this thing in the design world where you like workplaces and you talk about like, oh, it's like, it feels like we're family. And, you know, usually that just means it's a very dysfunctional, abusive family where I've been at those agencies. But that was like the only way I could describe it when like coming back to Parliament. I was like, I mean, I've tried quitting design every time I've not had a job. I'm like, do I have any other skills? Can I do anything else? Turns out I can't. This is the only thing I'm qualified for. This and Radio Shack and Papa Murphy's. Like,
oh,
that's
no.
It.
You're down to just one of those.
Yeah. It just felt like I was going home. And I was just like, yeah. I even like apologized to them for leaving. I was like, I'm sorry. I didn't want to leave. And so it just, yeah, it felt like coming home. And now I love working with them every day. And like, we're a super small company and it's that kind of rare thing where you can trust absolutely trust every single person there.
Yeah.
And we get tons of, as I always say, we get enough rope to hang ourselves. They let us do whatever we please.
They shouldn't provide you any rope.
No.
It seems like a mistake.
Yeah. And so they just kind of let me run my own projects over there. And as long as I keep doing a good job, they don't care. It's great.
Well, I think it's also interesting to think, like, I think sometimes when you leave something, like, you don't really anticipate the idea that you would ever return to it.
No, I thought I was gone for good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it is special to be like, to be finishing up another thing and to be like, actually, you know, there was something that was a real spark here. There was like, it felt like that was what I needed out of a workplace too.
Well, I think like a big part of this too, that's we haven't chatted about is like somewhere during that time, I also quit painting. I just decided I was like, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
I need to kind of focus in on things that, I mean, I definitely had like a not healthy relationship with my art practice. It was like a thing I was like, I scheduled time. I was always heads down and it was probably not the healthiest thing for me. So I finally stepped away at some point. And so I think that was also kind of a part of that whole process of being at Parliament and then leaving and coming back was about finding the creative things that I still found joy in.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, art and design, very different practices.
Very, very different.
But I think it allowed me to kind of like look at design in a way that I wasn't looking at it because I always had this art thing. I always had this like the freedom of art where I could do anything.
Yeah, like this is you and this is a team of people and
yeah,
it's a different.
And I think the fun outcome of that was that by getting rid of the art stuff, it honestly freed me up personally to get weirder in the design stuff. Because I'm just like, at that point, I was like, I didn't have that outlet anymore. So I was like, let's get stuff as weird as possible in the actual, like, where people are paying us for it. Like, that's all I want. Pay me to get weird. it's the name of my OnlyFans. Pay me to get weird.
We've already reached the plug section. Hit Calvin up on OnlyFans.
I think that's
something kind of special too. Like it is hard, you know. I also at one point had kind of an art practice. Like I'd come to the school that I now teach at for art.
That was when I first met you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when I was in grad school,
and we were just young babies in diapers making art.
Truly posting pictures of our art on Flickr, very futuristic things. But yeah, like I think I definitely did not stick with it as long as you had. But, you know, like it is a hard thing, you know, to look at something that, you know, at one point, like, you know, you felt like was driving what you wanted to do and to realize like, I'm not getting what I need out of this anymore. Like, this is not bringing me joy. This is not. this is not anything anymore. And, you know, the time that it takes is kind of draining me down. And like at the very end for me, like I had this project that was just like a commission that was just completely falling apart. And
I've had some of those.
Yeah. It's like, I think when it is solely on you too, as it kind of has to be in art, like it's really draining.
Yeah.
And well,
Well, I think a big part of it too is, I mean, when you're a person, I feel like there's different reasons why we do art. This is a whole new podcast.
We've entered this era.
Yeah.
The new theme song. Beep, yeah. Beep, beep, biddy.
Yeah.
Art.
Sting.
We can't get Sting in here. He's so expensive at this point.
I think there's just like a different thing you get out. Like, I mean, design is inherently built around commerce.
Yeah.
Like you're fulfilling some kind of like business objective always. And I honestly think that's been art through most of time. Like you look back every like piece of art history you've ever looked at is actually just a design project.
Yeah, basically.
At least the ones that we've recorded. It's like all these paintings of Jesus, they're just for some folks who had money.
The Mona Lisa is a commission.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like the whole idea of like what art is to us now is still relatively new. I mean, granted, it's a few hundred years old now.
Yeah.
I feel like we're still discovering why we do art. And like, I don't think we know yet, but there's definitely a different reason. For me, I'm always just like, I'm pretty blatant about it. It's like, I always needed to just feel love from others. But since I was raised a man in America, I can't be vulnerable, so I can only do it through these objects I make.
Yeah.
So like I want to receive your love through these paintings I make, and that's it. Like, and
well, unfortunately you also chose the art world, which is the most withholding of all emotional spaces.
Just the worst boyfriend.
Yeah.
Just the worst abusive
constantly
boyfriend.
Testing.
Yeah, and that was what it was for me, where it was just like, that was how I literally, like, that was how I accumulated love.
Yeah.
Every painting that I made was like an attempt to kind of like get love from others. When that's like in your head and you've been working that way for 15, 20 years,
yeah,
you're like, at some point you're just like, why am I doing this? Like, this boyfriend sucks.
what am I hoping to accomplish here?
Yeah. And so I, at some point I just was like, I think I gotta let that go.
Yeah.
And I mean, I still miss it. I still go out and see art shows all the time, and like, it's like now when you like, whenever you go see a band live, you're like, maybe I should start a rock band again. that's kind of the same thing how I feel with art, like when I go to a good show. But thankfully, I've been holding that off, but not as easily with... I picked up the guitar again, so that side's still winning. But.
I don't know. I would love to... Because you're a metalhead, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you came to our school, Portland State University, gave a show and tell presentation in which you used a presentation that was like metal type.
Yeah.
Primarily. I would love to know what like a black metal design band could do.
See, that'd be great. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
You want to start a band?
You've heard me sing, so
yeah.
I'm not sure you actually want me on board for this project. I love it and I want to support it.
How's your like black metal banshee scream though? That's
ouch.
Nailed it.
Yeah, that's the sound that I make when I stub my toe.
Ouch. So I think now I'm just like, I'm like too old and not angry enough to be in a metal band anymore though. So I don't know what it's gonna be. I've been playing music again. That's like the new creative outlet again.
Yeah, but what is the music that you're playing then?
I don't know.
Oh, it's just
sad guy in a room with pedals.
Oh,
too many guitar pedals.
So shoegaze?
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. Gothy things, occasionally metal-y things.
Oh, okay.
I don't
know. All right.
We'll see. I'll figure out when I grow up.
We'll get there someday. I mean, you own a house and you have a child. That's...
No, I don't have a child.
Oh.
I just have cats and a dog.
I thought you had a child.
No, I have a wife and we have a horse, which is like a child. it's about as expensive as a real child. But
my tall strapping child.
Yeah, he's actually pretty short for a horse.
Oh.
So why do you got to remind him of it? But the horse thing is not mine. That's all my wife's thing.
Yeah, my child is eating too many oats.
Yeah, I can barely handle the cats and dog.
Yeah. But then like that, you know, I think it's like also the thing of like, we are holding ourselves to account to be the vision of, I think, lives that maybe never existed too. Yeah. Like, I would, in a way, there's part of me that wants to live the exact kind of life that my parents lived, because it seemed stable-ish at the time. Yeah. But then I think back and it's, no, it never was.
Mayhem.
You know, and also like the socioeconomic conditions for that never existed.
Oh, yeah. My life is like so completely boring now because of the lives my parents lived. They were like, my parents were chaos, like, like just wild animals, drug yeah. addicts. And like, I mean, I do what I do now because my dad was like a master carpenter, but he drank like a fish and was just a wild man. But like, that's now my whole life. Is the first time I got that first design paycheck, where I was making $10 an hour, it was the richest I've ever been. It was like complete life-changing moment, though. Like, I had tasted stability.
Ugh.
And I was just like, this is the best. Yeah. It's like, it turns out life can be stable and calm. I was like, yes, I'm gonna be the most boring old man starting at 19. Like, that was my real thing. I was still playing in metal bands and all that stuff, totally pretending to be like this cool wild guy. And like, sure, I had my wild years of drinking and drugs and all those things, but it was always like, even in those circles, I was like the uptight guy who's like, listen, have you tested those drugs? Like, I was like that guy.
I mean, it's very, very important.
So that all happened because that first design job was like, this is what stability can taste like. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So now I'm just full blown that way. I was just like, I want my life boring and dependable every single day.
full on like stability seeking. And why shouldn't anyone be?
Yeah.
Hey, if anyone wants to offer me some stability, I'd love some.
Who's selling stability out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a company called stability.ai, but I'm going to guess that they're not offering any stability to humans.
Yeah, that's not for us.
No, not for us. Thank you so much for being here, Calvin. If people want to find your work, where do they go to do that?
Thanks for having me. This is great. How do you find me? Probably the easiest way is just calvinrosscarl.com.
calvinrosscarl.com?
It's all first names. Probably means I'm a serial killer, because that's what all first names mean. But...
yeah, that is the three name thing. Yeah. Or you're a child actor from the 1990s.
Which,
you know,
I don't think I was.
I think Tim the Toolman Taylor is trying to bring back Home Improvement against all logic and sanity. And they're definitely going to need to recast one of those parts because one of the children is currently in prison.
Didn't he also get busted for something?
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Turns out on this earth, it's just bad people all the way up. Even up to Home Improvement.
Oh, old Mr. Tim Allen is then and now up to no good. So don't, if you want to find Calvin, don't watch Home Improvement, I think is what we've learned.
I'm not there.
He's doing too much Home Improvement
on
his own.
You can only find me on the internet.
Only on the internet.
Which is the deep irony of this whole conversation today.
Yes. Luddite Calvin Ross Carl. Only available online. Thank you so much. Wow. Sorry, Orion, who's going to be editing this episode. Speaking of which, yes, this episode is edited by the great Orion Cortez, and I feel this being one of my messier interviews. Oof. Someday I hope to learn how to talk.
Felt amazing on my end.
You were amazing, Calvin.
Like I said, I do it for the love.
All the love is, and also, hey, speaking of love heading someone's way, all the love is heading to the listeners, too. It's being transmitted by whatever means you used to listen to this. Let it wash over you. And if you're listening to this at 3x speed, maybe slow down right here just so that the love doesn't like, yeah, you know, kind of, you know, like, hit you at a high speed, because I think that is actually very dangerous.
Just for the record, I'm not putting any love out. I'm only taking it in. That's all Sean, not me.
Yes, this is only on mic one, only on the left channel. Yeah. Are you going to be receiving love? Otherwise, you want to create a balance. You want to create a circuit, you know, or else it's just going to overload things.
The most important part of being a creative director is never giving the love in return. That's the most important part. Just kidding. Be a nice creative director.
Yeah, please. If you like this show and you're enjoying the love that you're getting through whatever means you're using to listen to it, feel free to subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything, in spite of the word subscribe that so often now just means we're trying to get money out of you. You can also get to various other places if you want to find a different player of choice, who knows, by visiting our website, dididothat.design. That's also a good place to go if you want to get to our social media accounts or see images that go along with each and every episode, including this one. And yeah, that's all I got. I'm Sean Schumacher. This has been Did I Do That? And as we always say at the close of every episode,
good riddance.
Good riddance. Okay, bye.
Good riddance is actually really good.
4/20 like cool things to plug. They're like, on 4/20 there's this cool thing that I'm launching now.
Yeah, you're not doing like a big shoe drop or something like that.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Whatever the opposite of that is. That's what I'm doing.
You're just dropping some old shoes into the dumpster.
I'm dropping
because they're
myself,
worn out.
I'm dropping myself onto a couch horizontally. And sleeping. That's
so you're pulling a Garfield.
Yeah.
You're doing viral marketing for the Garfield movie.
Yeah, I'm just getting real thick on lasagna and preparing myself for it.